Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Tina Horn, and this is Interrobang. Interrobang is the bonus segment of my Wire People Into That podcast. Follow at Tina Horn Sass or at Tina Horn's Ass, if you're nasty, on Twitter and Instagram. Visit wirepeopleintothat.com. Support my show and get extra shit at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. Mistress Blunt, hello. How are you? Can I call you Mistress?
Yes, you may. You may.
Great. Oh, fantastic. Now that I have permission. I'm so excited to be talking with you. I feel like we always have a lot to talk about, and usually when I have a lot to talk to someone about, especially when it's related to sex or gang or gender or love, I figure we should do it into a microphone.
Yes, definitely. We've already covered so much that all of you have missed. It's a shame.
Well, they should obviously pay to just like be a piece
sit
of furniture. Exactly, while we talk.
Those.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I could use a foot massage, actually.
Doesn't sound bad.
No, it doesn't sound bad at all. If you are sincerely interested in this, you can hit me up, slide into my DMs. Do you want to tell the people about your work in general and what you do?
Sure. Recently, I've been focusing a lot of my energy on Dasya Yoga, which is a private devotional yoga practice tailored to masochists and submissives. And I found through doing old school BDSM training as a dominatrix, a lot of overlap with my training as a yoga teacher. Mm. And sort of naturally, I had incorporated a lot of these different aspects of devotion and submission into my slave training that are also very prevalent in yoga, such as different pranayama or breath work or different asana physical postures and mudras, hand positions for offering and submissiveness and openness. And so I was really enjoying the clients that were coming to see me for this. And so I decided to sort of make a wider, broader offering of this to get more people that are into the things that I am into.
Awesome. Well, you know what I love about that is that I love yoga. I've always wanted to do teacher training. Maybe one day I will. It also actually feels nice to just be a student in something. Obviously, when one becomes a yoga teacher, one remains a student lifelong. There are, I feel like I know a lot of the things that you, or I feel like I've experienced a lot of the things that you're talking about with the relationship between submission and openness in a yoga practice and surrender. Mm-hmm. And what I like about the idea of you building a practice around it is that probably in a lot of cases, people feel those feelings and they don't know what to do with them, and they can be exploited by the wrong people who are not explicitly making BDSM a part of it, but are sort of taking advantage of those implicit feelings or of the vulnerable state that people get into. You know, I mean, various levels of exploitation from like cults leading
gurus. I was definitely
gurus.
Getting the cult vibe. And I think, especially in the West, power dynamics aren't talked about as explicitly. And so there's just a lot of abuses of power that happen. And I think even within the yoga community, there are lots of sex scandals with gurus taking advantage of their disciples and not really having the language surrounding it to figure out what exactly is going on. And I mean, I think consensually it can be a really sexy dynamic and right. one that I really enjoy. And, but I think when you're providing a non-sexual service, sex shouldn't be included.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that this is true of so many different things, that if we were able to talk more explicitly about how to negotiate the terms of a power exchange, that everybody would get more of what they want. But because we don't have those tools, we take advantage of people, are taken advantage of, et cetera, et cetera. And it does seem like that happens a lot.
Everyday people interact Western... with power dynamics, and it's something that isn't always done very thoughtfully. And I think BDSM provides a really nice arena to sort of explore those things in a sexual capacity, but also in a way where you can, like, as a yoga teacher, they always tell you to take what you learn off of the mat. And I always say, take what you learn out of the dungeon. The things that you're learning when you're exploring with me shouldn't just be present when you're with me. And I hope that people take a little bit of it with them while they leave, and are able to be a little bit more intentional with the ways that they submit. And who they're submitting to.
Cool. Can you give me an example of I really want to. I don't.
You're already calling me mistress.
I don't know if I can afford you right now, but oh God, now I'm so distracted. If I was gonna come see you, that's what we should do, is I should have a slave pay for to come see you.
Do it.
I actually have had clients who would pay for me to go see other ladies and then tell them
selfless.
About it.
Selfless service.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, totally. Other ladies were like, buy me lingerie. And I was like, buy me time with pretty ladies. It worked out really well. If I was going to come see you, what would a session look like? What's an example of a session, or how you would approach your first Dasya yoga session?
You have to fill out my contact form and let me know your interest.
Oh.
But I think one of my favorite questions on my contact form is, when is the last time you cried?
Mm.
It's fascinating. I have people see me from across the gender spectrum, and
cool.
It's really interesting seeing similarities of when the last time people cried were. And I have people tell me that they haven't cried in years, or I've had people tell me that the last time they cried, when they were looking at pro doms that were marketing towards just cis men. And it was like, I was like, I definitely want to see you. And I think that's just a really telling question of sort of where people are at in acknowledging their vulnerability and their ability to be open and communicate and share.
That's so great that you see people across the gender spectrum.
Yeah.
Do you find that more in this practice, that you get responses from women and queer people?
Definitely. I think it's... I made some conscious choices with language and with photos, and I show non-cis male bodies on my website, which I think is really important to me. And I think it's a practice that doesn't necessarily take place in a dungeon. And while it's sexual, it isn't sort of reliant on a male orgasm, which most sex should be like that.
Agreed.
But yeah, I get a very diverse range of people contacting me for sessions, which I really appreciate and really enjoy. I definitely get much more thoughtful people.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are there other people who are doing this kind of thing, or are you one of a kind?
I'm definitely one of a kind.
I mean, obviously.
I'm not really too sure. I think there is someone in London doing group classes, sort of kink classes, but I think mine has more of a spiritual component. I haven't really figured out how to do group classes and negotiating consent and like the deep level of emotional work that I like to do. I don't think would really be conducive to a group dynamic. Couples I love, but
cool. Oh man, when was the last time you cried?
When was the last time I cried? Oh man. I cried while watching... Have you seen The Dukes of Burgundy?
No, I don't even know what that is.
The Dukes of Burgundy is a really sexy, kinky film.
Oh.
And it's about the relationship between two, it's a lesbian BDSM relationship, and it's...
I'm listening.
Yes, you're listening. It's beautifully shot. Lots of butterflies. This is going to be a horrible review. I'm not a qualified person to be giving a review.
Lots of butterflies, okay.
It was about the relationship of the submissive constantly asking for certain things and the dominant sort of slowly breaking down while they're sort of weighing their desires with the submissive's demands. And I had a conversation with it about a friend, and her response was, I feel so bad for the submissive. I'm like, she's like, how sad is it that the submissive can never get what they want?
Yeah.
And it was just a totally different perspective than how I had seen the movie. So I watched it again and just had like sort of a mixed mishmash of emotions.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah. Because I was looking at it from the dom perspective, which I think is definitely how the movie was filmed.
Right.
But it was just something that I hadn't quite considered and made me feel a little bit more empathic for clients who are very sort of set on a certain fetish or fantasy that doesn't really provide space for a DS dynamic. Not that those are the sessions that I like, but just a little empathy. I think I cry pretty often. I feel like I do a lot of intense work both within BDSM and outside of it, and crying is oftentimes just a way to sort of release and move on.
That's great. Yeah.
I love other people's tears too.
I bet you do.
Always an added bonus.
Awesome. Have you seen those phone cases that look like a carton of milk that says 100% boys' tears?
Yes.
Yeah. You need one of those.
I do.
I'm trying to sort of think of the moments in my yoga practice that have felt kinky, and not necessarily in the sense that the yoga teacher felt like my dominant, but more like, I guess the overlap for me, and part of the reason that your work is interesting to me, the idea in both yoga and BDSM of creating a space, like a carving out parameters in the space-time continuum.
This space is different than other space, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, in that regard, I hate the term safe space.
I also hate it.
I think it's so fucked up. Like, how can you tell someone that you're holding a safe space for them when you don't know what their definition of safe is? And I think it's also a really dangerous place to say that you're holding.
I agree. I think it was Mallory Ortberg who tweeted something that I return to a lot, which is, don't confuse the feeling of safety with the condition of being safe. I think a lot of the time we think we're safe when we're not, and we think that we're unsafe when we're not. I mean, and that's part of what I like about BDSM, and I guess yoga too, that you're acknowledging that you're never safe. I don't know.
But I think that's part of it, because I think there's something inherently dangerous about telling someone that they're in a safe space, that if something comes up, they don't feel like they can talk about it, because it's a safe space, so why would that come up?
Right. I guess what I like about both BDSM and yoga, or the thing that I feel, the sliver of the Venn diagram that I've been pondering, is that you intentionally put yourself in vulnerable or uncomfortable or even boundary pushing, painful, suffering is a word that you and I have talked about and that I want to talk about more, situations, positions, sensations, in order to what? In order to, in my experience, learn how to undermine power when someone tries to abuse it. In some ways, I do feel like it's like drinking poison, or like introducing poison into your system to become immune to it. Although, ultimately, you never know.
But I feel like you're not introducing anything external, which is what I love about yoga, that it's a very self-reflective practice. So you might be feeling like you're introducing poison, but from where I'm sitting as a yoga teacher, you're just sort of noticing and sitting and observing and being honest with what's going on with you. And while that might look like poison, learning to sit with it will allow it to pass.
It's less like introducing poison and more like seeing what happens when you start to purge toxins that are in you.
Churned up and the sort of chaos that happens before.
Yeah.
Cleanliness.
This is so mean, but I have a distantly related family member who once at a party was talking about some product and how it killed all of the toxins in your body. And even though I'm like a little cruel and have sort of like always made fun of her behind her back for saying that, part of the reason that I like fixated on it was that I found it such like an interesting misunderstanding of the concept of a toxin, that you could just go in and like wipe them out.
Right.
But actually the way that you need to think about a toxin is that it needs to be purged. You need to detoxify. So it's not like going in and being able to identify all of the bad things and then like choop 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 like annihilate them. Like you have to do the work of like bringing them up
to the surface,
to the surface, and letting them go.
Yeah. And I think I often say that the most sadistic thing that I can do is force someone to sit with themselves, because really what's worse? And I think I think too, within yoga and BDSM, people who come to see me, sometimes the hour that they spend with me is the only hour they're not attached to their phone. And
oh,
I think that in and of itself is transformative. And I like always make sure to have people turn their phones off. I don't want to be interrupted. I think when you sit and focus your energy, I expect it to be all focused on me.
Totally.
And I feel like just people don't spend time disconnected. And I think being on a yoga mat, being in someone's dungeon, being with a lover is a really unique form of meditation in our day and age where people just don't use their brains that way.
Or their bodies.
Or their bodies, yeah.
Yeah. Or their consciousness or their attention or their
feelings.
Right.
It's like
feelings.
A meditation on monotasking.
Oh my God. Cool. To what degree? So sometimes yoga is painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess another thing that both yoga and BDSM have taught me is how to discern and navigate the difference between discomfort or sensation that is constructive for me and something that is going beyond the boundary of what I will ever want to experience, what I am ready for in that moment, right? So like I could be interested in being it could be psychological, like I am interested in being pushed psychologically by humiliation, but there are some things that I do not want to be humiliated about, right? And so the vulnerability of humiliation, the humility that you learn from playing with erotic embarrassment is really constructive. And then there are some things where like
I think it can be empowering too, because you can have all of these things that you might really feel are true about yourself said to you and still exist afterwards, and
that's
it
right.
hasn't totally defeated you, I think is a really amazing cathartic experience for a lot of people.
And it makes you, it can really help you to feel less afraid of
those
things.
And I think especially if it's things that you, like a truth you really believe about yourself, hearing it vocalized by another.
Yeah.
And like an honest, and I always like to have a little bit of loving in my sessions. I know that that's not everyone's vibe, but sort of still being appreciated for other things or being appreciated for that thing that you find most humiliating about yourself.
Mm,
I think is a really beautiful moment.
That you can still
be
loved or appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Like you have a tiny dick, I have plenty of other uses for you.
It's not the worst. Yeah, I mean, it's not the worst thing that could possibly happen. I've been in a lot of different yoga practices, and I really do not like it when certain teachers or certain practices or studios are invested in, maybe it's cliche to call it, you know, Western, the like bigger, better, faster, more like push yourself, push yourself, push yourself. I mean, first of all, I like don't want to injure myself. I want to be pushed out of my comfort zone, but I don't want
to be
bullied out of, you know, I don't want to relinquish my power over to that person where they're telling me what's good for me. Like, I want them to guide me to a knowledge of what is good for me. And from there, to push myself from that knowledge.
It's like working with what you're bringing to the mat or to the dungeon and not what the teacher or dominant wants to see you doing that doesn't work for your body or your mind. And I think both yoga and BDSM offer a really interesting way to become aware of power dynamics, like on your yoga mat, realizing when a teacher is guiding you beyond your comfort zone, or not only your comfort zone but your physical safety, I think is a really important awareness to have, and being able to use that as a learning experience and being able to stop and leave if it's a shitty situation, if it's bringing something up for you, or sort of staying in a safer space, whether it be child's pose or whatever that looks like to the individual, and processing what comes up when being pushed like that, I think is a really important experience.
Cool. What do you hope people gain from your sessions?
I really enjoy when slaves come to me looking to sort of cultivate a self-awareness that they're looking to expand upon. I usually ask people what their intention is in seeing me, or what they're looking to get out of a session with me before we begin. And I had a woman the other week tell me that she was looking to wake up, and I thought that that was really beautiful.
Cool.
And I think that, intimate interactions when people are in incredibly vulnerable states have hugely transformative potential, and I think it's an opportunity for people to learn about themselves, learn about how they relate to others and what that looks like and what feels good and what doesn't, and learning how to articulate that in a way that they feel comfortable with and still is providing them with everything that they need.
Well, I've got my checkbook out, so that's really fascinating. And yeah, I can't wait to learn more. If people want to learn more about this practice, how would they do that?
Well, you can find me at dasyayoga.com, dasyayoga.com. My Twitter is at Mistress Blunt, and my Instagram is at dasyayoga.
Growth through pain. It's beautiful.
It's my campaign slogan.
I love that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Speaking of pain, one other thing that we had on our list of things to talk about was the relationship between chronic pain and BDSM for you. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. So my relationship with pain has always been a very personal one. I grew up around people who were in chronic pain, and when I was 18, I was diagnosed with a chronic illness, which sort of explained a lifelong experience with pain. And it was around the same time that I was getting in touch with La Domaine SMR and Upstate BDSM Training Chateau, And I'd been in contact with them and was looking to sort of explore some things about myself. And when I finally found myself there, I found aspects of submission and domination to be incredibly powerful and cathartic as an opportunity to take control over when and how I felt pain and to whom I was experiencing this with on either end. And it really became a component in my healing, I feel.
Have you talked to other people who have found BDSM to be a tool for healing?
Yeah, I think I've heard more people talking about it for emotional pain, which I think chronic illness is definitely intertwined very heavily with emotional pain. I've had the experience of working with individuals with other chronic health conditions, just seeing how they can transform while intentionally interacting with pain is really amazing. I feel like people who experience chronic pain can oftentimes be left out of BDSM because it's oftentimes seen as how much you can take.
Right.
And I think that it's important to be able to not limit your notion of what BDSM looks like to what one type of body can do.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much you can do with just the mind alone. It's what I'm most interested in. It really has beautiful transformative potential for people to reestablish relationships with their body and see how much their body and their mind can do and sort of reframe their conceptions of self in a way that serves them living their life, whatever that looks like.
Do you think that that for folks who experience chronic pain, that also being able to be in touch with their sadistic side and inflicting pain also can be healing and cathartic, to be not only in control of the pain that they're experiencing in their body, but to know someone who's welcoming pain and to be the person who
definitely
is controlling that?
I think it can go, I think both have healing potential. I think that being able to sort of take people on a journey somewhere sort of near where you've been is a really incredible experience. And I also just think we don't talk about pain or sadness in our culture very often or very openly. And I think what I love so much about BDSM is that it just feels so much more honest. Like, no one's happy all the time. No one's joyful all of the time. That's only tapping into a very small percentage of the human experience. And I feel like BDSM allows for all emotions. Like, all emotions are welcome here. And I think it's just so much more honest, especially if you're living in pain. And I mean, who isn't to some extent? We live in a fucked up society. It affects most people in a negative way, I feel like.
Yeah, life is pain for sure.
Yeah. Totally. Yes. In summary, life is pain. Submit to me.
If it's going to be painful, you might as well submit to Mistress Blunt.
You might as well get up.
True.
If I let you.
What would you say to someone whose perspective on all of this was, if life is pain and the world is filled with suffering and you yourself may have suffering in your life, why intentionally create a space in which to welcome more pain and suffering? Why not instead try to create peace and joy and comfort and respite from pain?
Yeah. I think my short answer would be, it sounds boring, the second half of what you said, like, what do you learn about yourself when you're staying within your comfort zones? And I think mindfully,
peace is not necessarily a comfort zone for everyone.
That's true. Neither is pleasure.
Word. Totally.
Yeah, that's true. But if, So I've been working on a research project sort of exploring altered states of consciousness and how they've been brought about through the sort of masochistic mechanism through various different modalities of religion, spirituality, sexuality, and yoga. And I've sort of just been amazed at how there are all these overlaps of sort of masochistic practices within every religion, every spiritual practice, many sexual practices, that sort of like these ascetic practices of surrender and devotion and offering into like really extreme extents.
And sacrifice.
Yeah, and sacrifice. And I am under the impression that life is pain, and we've sort of evolved to have the masochistic mechanism as a coping mechanism. And it's this part of our brain that if you interact with it intentionally becomes a sort of a way to like hack your brain to tap into these altered states of consciousness. And sort of like some people do that through drug use, through chanting, through drumming, through ecstatic dancing. And I think BDSM play is another way to tap into that and sort of building the space and creating this space to set an intention before you play and go on that journey with another person to see what you can learn about yourself and about each other and about how you connect and communicate and what that means and what that looks like is just hugely valuable. And I think just playing with pleasure, I don't know, that sounds good too, just playing with pleasure alone.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with that. But I think it's just, I really am drawn towards tantric philosophy, the like leaning deeply into any experience as a way to reaching God. And I say God in air quotes because I don't particularly subscribe to any formal notion of God.
The divine.
The divine, sure, yes.
Yeah.
That leaning deeply into any experience as a way to reach the divine is a really beautiful philosophy, and that by meditating on your experiences and your sensations is just a really powerful form of present moment meditation that is God in and of itself. That the present moment now is a form of the divine, and bringing your attention to that in the moment with a partner while you're alone is like a magical thing.
So why, if human history is filled with ritualistic practices across cultures, across religions, including Christianity, of sacrifice and suffering and like self-denial or like self-abjugation, even just the practice of like
fasting.
Like
ascetic practices and mortification of the flesh.
Yeah, well, it's certainly self-flagellation I'm thinking of, but also martyrdom.
I mean, I think a lot of things in religion are a sacrifice, whether it be through how you dress, how you wear your hair,
right,
who you can interact with, how you can interact with them,
right?
It's
like
self-control.
Exactly, right? So even one, you know, obviously this has been used in oppressive and repressive ways, but even the idea of like self-sacrifice, like even I'm thinking of what the fuck is it called, I'm so bad at Christian details,
Lent.
Thank you. I'm like, first there's people with like smudges on their forehead walking around, and then people aren't drinking caffeine, and then it's Easter. Right, Lent. That's a kind of sacrifice, right? If history is filled with these kinds of practices, then why is BDSM considered such a perversion? And why is BDSM so derided and stigmatized? Is it just because it's focused on sex and does not necessarily have a larger infrastructure? Is it because it's so gay? When BDSM is stigmatized and persecuted even among straight people? Is it still because of homophobia? Like, what is that about? Like, why don't we have a welcome space for that in 21st century American culture?
Part of it's because our society is really prude in sort of anything that's sexual or non-normative is sort of pushed away. But also I think it's like, just from a marketing perspective, you're not subscribing to like one god. The pitch is a little bit personal, and the personal I think is harder to sell.
Well, right. Also, if you're exploring consciousness and satisfaction
and the self
and punishment, then like on your own or with other people, then you're not seeking those things from consumption.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously some people,
if you're happy with yourself,
I mean, there are serious, like, BDSM.
Capitalism.
Well, what I'm saying, I'm saying because capitalism, but I'm also saying, I mean, obviously, there's plenty of consumption to be had and done with related to sexual subcultures. I mean, there's like, you know, like $9,000 spanking benches that you can get if you're fancy, or even look at, I'm sorry to bring it up, but, you know, The 50 Shades of Grey movies, especially, mm-hmm. the books to a certain degree, but like the movies are total class porn, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea that you could like only play with power if you like have like a fancy, expensive, private, sleek dungeon, and also like a yacht.
Definitely.
And a helicopter. I still stand by my hypothesis that it's to ride it because you're not worshiping like one priest or one mall or like the mall.
Mall. I mean, yeah, I think it's a very personal practice. I don't, even marriage is somewhat of a business transaction.
No
that
kidding.
Was then taken over by priests as
right.
a way of making money over ordaining over the marriage.
So cynical.
Yeah.
Of course you're right.
But yeah, I think I'll say it again, BDSM is this deeply personal path, and I think it's a little bit scary about what you can learn about yourself, and I think people are a little bit afraid of it, and I think most people that I talk to about the sex that they're having that don't identify as kinky are having kinky sex,
right?
And they just don't use the same language to describe it.
Do you think that's good or bad? Do you think that they should be using that language?
I think if it's working for them, it's fine. But I think vanilla sex can be really kinky if that's your kink.
Sure.
It's like, yeah, look me in the eyes. That's kinky. If you're asking for what you want and you're able to articulate that and you're communicating with your partner, I think that's kinky.
Yeah, then the problem is when those people turn around and judge kinky people.
Yeah.
Or when all of these things are being done without communication or structure, mm-hmm. and then the power
isn't explicitly defined.
And is inevitably flowing towards the person who has the most default power, which is usually mm-hmm. the white
right.
cis man.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think engaging, what I love about BDSM is engaging intentionally with power dynamics and power structures allows you to unpack them and subvert them in a really fascinating way, where so much can be learned about yourself and about others and how you sort of exist within society as a whole. It's a shame not to explore those things.
I mean, you know, you're singing my song. That's beautifully put. The idea of using BDSM to subvert power makes me think of something that we were talking about, which is something that you also offer, which is a femme induction session. Can you tell me what that looks like?
Yeah. So the femme induction session is sort of my response to forced femme, which I don't do.
Mm.
I find humiliation play really powerful and interesting, but a really tricky territory to navigate while still feeling good about my politics, sort of. And I find humiliating someone and forcing someone to be femme as an insult to myself.
Right. So for those who may not know, forced femme is at this point kind of a classic dominatrix, like a classic item on a list of a dominatrix menu, right, that you might find in an ad, that one thing that she might offer is forced feminization. And that often looks like, quote unquote, forcing, obviously within the context of negotiated consent, the fantasy of being of the man being forced to wear women's clothes, of a man being forced to perhaps behave in a feminine way, being forced to wear makeup, perhaps being forced to do things that they think that only women do, like get fucked in their holes, for example. Sometimes forced feminization has to do with being turned on by getting a chance to wear women's clothes, because often women's clothes are very lovely and fabulous, and it might be a fetish related to that. And it also, men want to explore anal pleasure, and the only way they can contextualize that is by being quote-unquote turned into a woman. I'm certainly not against the idea of cis men dressing up in glamorous clothing. I am not against the idea of cis men feeling like they want to get into a feminine space in order to be penetrated or to experience anal pleasure. But you are not the only person that I have heard have complicated feelings about that practice. I mean, yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with forced femme. It's just not something that gets me off, so it's not something that I offer.
And it doesn't have to be humiliating. I mean, for some people, it's strictly sensual.
Right. And I think I just want people who are playing with me and exploring really real things that, you know, affect me on a daily basis to be thinking about them critically. That's my sadism. Like, you're gonna think about this.
Yes!
I mean, femme is so powerful and beautiful and magical. And if someone's humiliated by me showing them the magic of femme, that's fine. Like, sure, that's hot. But I want it to be approached with respect.
Yeah.
And so I sort of think of my femme induction sessions as a really sexy transformation of sort of taking off the mask that you present to society and being allowed to be open and vulnerable and try on these like really beautiful, sexy, glimmery objects and transform before my eyes into whatever I want you to look like, and sort of share the magic of, like, I sort of think of it like the magic of what you would imagine like girls at a sleepover having, and like how like they're sharing secrets helping each other with makeup. I think that that's really sexy. And so I like to do a really slow and meditative removal of the sort of the masculine facade and sort of reintegrating feminine aspects. And I like to do it slowly. I like to integrate breath work into it. And I like to take my time and sort of see what comes up.
I'm feeling tingly. Because, you know, the funny thing is, well, let me ask you a question.
Go for it.
Do you get people of various genders interested in those sessions?
I think less so, but I'm interested in that. And I think that's another reason that I don't love the forced femme, is I just like gender fuckery.
Yeah.
Like respectful gender fuckery.
Yeah.
And like, sure, like that doesn't mean you can't be my little whore. That doesn't mean like you won't feel properly used or submissive. Just that you'll walk away with it with a newfound respect for women.
Hallelujah. You're doing good work out there, Blunt.
It's mistress. Oh.
Pardon moi, mistress. You don't have to be a man to feel alienated from the power of femme.
Right.
And, you know, my relationship to femme has always been complicated, despite being assigned female at birth and continuing to identify as female. I always have to feel like any femininity that I have is like inscribed on top of my masculinity. So I usually, my shorthand for that is thinking of my femininity as being a faggot. But I have had scenes both intentionally planned and also maybe sometimes just like with a little bit more like blurred lines where almost nothing makes me feel more submissive than having like beautiful women like dress me up. That was one of the best things about like working in a dungeon was like during downtime, it would just be like, let's dress Tina up.
Girl time.
But it makes me feel like a little boy. It makes me feel like a little boy that has been like wherever. Like, you know that scene in
That's okay.
No, go ahead.
No, I like that, making you feel like a little boy and like your big sister's friends are getting
That's
you
right.
ready. And I think it's a little bit less forceful because I think in most cases like that, the little boy just wants to please and
yeah, wants any kind of attention.
I worship and revere you and think you're the most beautiful woman that I've ever seen, and like, please teach me anything that you want.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie Almost Famous?
Not in a very long time.
There's a scene where the male protagonist, who is like on tour with all of these like this like 70s rock band and all of the befriending all of the groupies, there's a scene where all of the groupies are just like lying around being bored, and they're all these like beautiful 60s 70s goddess types, and they're like Stevie Nicks shawls, and they're just like laying around a hotel room feeling bored, and then they're like, let's deflower the kid. And then they like dance around him and take his virginity, apparently. And that scene has, yeah, that scene has like stuck in my sexual imagination for like ever and ever and ever. I don't think that they like dress him up, but there is a sense of like them bringing
it's like a femme sacrifice.
Yeah. They're like bringing him into their feminine space. To make him a man.
Becoming a man by being surrounded by women.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway.
But I think, too, you asked if I play with gender with non-cis males. And I definitely do. I just think it's not as overt because there's less shame around it.
Like
my slave girl, like, I braid her hair.
Oh, my God.
And I, like, have her wear certain things for me. And I, like, love braiding her hair. It's this really intimate, beautiful, sexy moment of connection, and I just think it's, you know, it's playing with gender in a sort of more prescribed way, so it's less subversion of power, but still it's this really powerful and tender moment.
That makes me want to grow out my hair so you can braid my hair. Also, I just imagine it being like really tingly hair touching, like ASMR.
Yeah. And I think when you think of all of these femme things that are done in forced femme or my femme induction sessions, they're all very sensual and very tactile. And I think just sort of getting lost in those sensations, getting lost in the feeling of what it brings up for you and of all of the powerful women in your life.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Have you seen the Madonna sex book?
No.
Oh, we actually... You know, I'm going to get it down. Hold on. There's a picture in the Madonna sex book where she is in what looks like a hotel room with this beautiful male model, and she's putting lipstick on him, and it is a picture that has always captivated me.
Yeah, the tenderness with which she's holding his chin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And his hands placed perfectly behind his head.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. She knows what she's doing.
They definitely both know exactly what they're doing. That's like the image that I always think of when I think of a more playful, reverent form of, femme induction. I like that a lot. Do you get a lot of clients who are interested in that?
I get some people who are interested in playing with gender. I think that's less what they're interested in, more what I make them do.
Awesome. Well, that...
If they want to do it with me.
That is peak... Mistress Blunt.
Yeah. And I think it could look very similar to a forced femme, like very similar things could be happening, but it's just the intention and the critical eye that I would ask a slave to go about doing that. Like, if you want to explore these things with me, they're serious things, and you will look at your shit and why you think it's humiliating. You can be totally humiliated by it and you can get off on your humiliation, but you're gonna think about that. Sit in the corner and think about that in your little dress.
Oh, man.
And then go donate money to Planned Parenthood.
That's, I really do like the idea of getting someone all dressed up and then having them, like, get their, well, they've turned their phone off, obviously, but, you know, having them,
taking,
like,
their phone off airplane mode and donating to charities.
Yeah.
God. To femcenter charities. That's, like, my ideal session.
Oh, my God. That is really amazing and beautiful. You're combining so many things. It's financial domination with, like, training and self-betterment. I love that. Mistress Blunt, thank you for taking me on a pseudo-spiritual journey today.
You're pseudo-welcome.
I feel sort of cleansed.
Wonderful.
Cool. Tell people again where they can find you on the internet if they are interested in talking to you more about these things and perhaps booking a session with you.
You can find me at dasyayoga.com, dasyayoga.com, or mistressblunt.com. And my handles are at mistressblunt or at dasyayoga.
Cool, on Twitter and Instagram and yes, all over the interwebs. Well, thank you so much for coming over, and I'm sure that we'll have you back again sometime.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tina. Goodbye, Internet.
Goodbye, Internet.
A vacation, new locations, oh.
Interrobang is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme music is by my brother from another mother, Moot. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.